League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
No one warned us. No one said you were going to lose both engines at a lower altitude than any jet in history.
Simulations showed that you could make it back to the airport.
Not possible. I felt it go.
From director Clint Eastwood, critics are calling it a triumph. 5 stars.
Brace for impact.
What if I didn't get this wrong? What if I endangered the lives of all those passengers?
People call you a hero.
I don't feel like a hero.
Sully, Miracle on the Hudson. In cinemas December 2nd. Certificate 12A.
That would be the most amazing and horrifying thing at the same time. Hello and welcome to Season 2, Episode 8 of the Tottenham Way Podcast. I am Tom and I'm your host. Those of you that listened last week will know that Dan Kilpatrick is not here this week because he is getting a runaround by ultras in Russia, reporting for ESPN on the game, which is Tuesday night. But we've big shoes to fill. We've got big men to fill them. So it's the first appearance of the season for Harry Sherlock. How are you, Harry, mate?
Very good.
Gold.com's Harry Sherlock, yes. I should say. Are you still covering West Ham?
Yes.
Good.
Is it fun?
It must be. It's a hell of a lot to write about.
It is quite fun this season. Yeah. Because they're crap.
Yeah.
Which is... And I really think they might go down as well.
Whoa.
I really do. We had this conversation on Twitter, but I do think they might.
What we'll do is we'll speak... we've got a question right at the end from... in the listener questions bit. That is actually talking more specifically about the stadium, but we will talk to you about it because it's been obviously quite a big part of the narrative that's been going on there this season. Also joining us for his first ever appearance on the Tottenham Way, but not your first ever pod appearance, it's Jack Hussey, or Jack Tertrunk.
Hello, mate.
How are you?
Yeah, good, thanks.
Thank you for joining us. Rule the Roosts, Tertrunk, and...
The podcast that people stopped listening to listen to this because they didn't like me and...
Yeah, that one. That one.
Hi, yeah. Guys.
Couldn't escape that easily. So you do rule the roost with Raj, and Seb's now like the mainstay, isn't he?
He's
part of the furniture.
He was introduced as I think it was like a fruity option to a stagnating relationship. It's probably a nicer way of putting it than Raj did. But he's there now. He's there for good. So he's... when we're all the better for it.
Yes. So that was like a press release.
Really. Yeah.
We're really happy to have him on board. So I mentioned that Dan is in Moscow at the moment. About halfway through the pod, you're going to hear a little recording that he's going to do. He is out there. I think he's doing it now. It's about 5 o'clock local time, London time. I don't know what time it is out in Moscow, but... He is
1972.
He's doing the Poch press conference, and he's going to come out of that, give us a few thoughts. We're hoping not to duplicate too many thoughts when we do our Cesca preview, but just in case we do, it's just a forewarning for that. But before we get to that, we have got two games to talk about. There's loads of games at the moment, isn't there?
It's great, isn't it?
It kind of is, yeah. I mean, if you're one of those people that goes to every game, then it must be costing you a hell of a lot of money. Middlesbrough was like £70 return, Dan said.
Christ.
Mm.
But Dan didn't have to pay it.
That's true. Yeah, actually, yeah, that's a good point. We should briefly talk about Gillingham because it was a very changed lineup. I think Eriksen, Janssen and Lamella were probably the most senior members of the team. Saw Vimmer come back, but it was really about the youngsters, wasn't it? So we saw Onuma score his first goal. Edwards had a debut. Winks started. I thought Winks was really impressive. Jack, just quickly, what did you make of Gillingham? Was there anything to make of it at all?
It was quite hard, wasn't it, really, to sort of take an awful lot from it. I think there's that old adage, isn't there, if you can only beat what's put in front of you, and I think that's kind of the way we got to look at this one. No disrespect to Gillingham, I've not watched them before that game, but they didn't really bring anything to us, they didn't trouble us at any point, but you know, you still got to take the positives from it, because big teams do lose to teams like that on these kind of occasions, so it wasn't our first team. It was good to see, again, the lads, Mark II, just kind of slipping effortlessly.
Yeah, very nice. Harry, did you go?
No.
Was West Ham, were West Ham playing that night? No, it's a serious question.
No, I was working, a proper desk shift that night, and I did kind of cover the game, stayed abreast of it. I can't agree with what Jack said, really. I mean, it's hard to take a lot from it. I know a bit more about Gillingham purely because I drive past the stadium a lot and my missus lives down there. So
oh, right. So not just for no reason.
Follow their results. And they do tend to lose a lot in the last minute. They like going 1-0 up and losing 2-1. So they've got Justin Edinburgh though, so that's quite a Spursy trait.
There might be something in that. There's something scientific in that.
With his big, horrible curtains. He doesn't have them anymore. He's got a kind of faux Diego Simeone doesn't he?
He's modernised.
Yeah. But I thought it was a really good performance. I thought, I agreed, I think Dan tweeted it, I thought that Edwards coming on kind of overshadowed how good the rest of the youngsters were. And I thought that was right. I thought Onuma was really good. I agree, I thought Winks looked like he'd been in that midfield for ages. But then, I say that, I went to a Europa League game a couple of years ago and Tom Carroll absolutely bossed it. And I was convinced that he was the next big thing. So I don't want to read too much into it. And I don't want to get on board the Edwards or Onuma hype train.
I think we can appreciate them for being advanced young players.
Absolutely,
in the position that they're in. But yeah, I mean, there's tougher tests to come for all of those players. But yeah, I don't think there was anything. There's no negative to take away from that, I don't think. Let's move on. So we had Middlesbrough on Saturday. The main talking point would be Sun. Actually, Jack, this is quite a good starting point because you've banned yourself talking about Sun on Rule of Roost, haven't you?
Well, it seems to. I think it was an executive decision made by Raj actually on the fly, and I'm happy to go over it if you want.
Is that on the back of Seb's comments at the end of last season about Sun?
Yeah, you know, it was an emotional time, wasn't it? I'm sounding more and more like Harry Redknapp as this pod. As Seb's official spokesman. I think it's just more so because every time Sun scores a goal, it's going to be, what do you think, Seb? You know. He did touch on it this week, actually, that, you know, Sun is in a rich vein of form at the moment. And to be fair to Seb, at the time he said as well, there will be periods where Sun plays well. And he just wants to see how he lasts over the course of the season. And again, when the chips are down, which is something to take from that. But as it is at the moment, Sun is looking pretty fucking good, isn't he?
I think Dan said last week about touching on how good his performances have been. And he said, he didn't say it to make a point, but he said it as a kind of caveat in the middle of his sentence. And he said, admittedly, it's against the teams that are both bottom of the league at the moment. It was Sunderland and Stoke. And now we've had Middlesbrough as well. And he has kind of wiped the floor with them. But I guess there's a place in every squad for a player like that. I mean, we got City on Sunday, which we'll come on to. But he's going to have to play well in that to kind of really have this blanket. He's on this such a good form, it doesn't matter who he's up against, sort of thing.
It's one of those things you don't want to caveat what he did against Middlesbrough. Like that second goal. This kind of encompasses it all perfectly, really. Because the finish was absolutely spectacular. His toil, his endeavour, if you like, to create that opportunity for himself was incredible as well. The determination to make that happen. However, the defending was hospital. You know, it was abysmal. So it's...
Hospital's being kind.
Yeah.
It was that bad. I think Son, what I like about him is that I think he's our only true winger, really. Like, he's the only kind of player. I don't want to say that can take his man on, because Lamella showed that he can do that. He properly mugged Townsend off, and that was fucking brilliant. But, you know, he's the one... He retains the spirit of pacey wingers at Spurs. And historically, those pacey wingers don't have any end product, and some does. But like you say, I think we need to remain a little bit wary. I think the fact that he's so open about admitting that he wanted to leave, I find that counterintuitive a little bit. Because it's like the fans are on your side, mate, right now. Don't say that you wanted to leave the club.
Yeah, I have put that in. I think it should be mentioned that his quotes today about how Poch convinced him to stay.
Look, I think that's great. And I get the impression that Poch probably said, play well and prove yourself here. Because you haven't done that yet. Mm. And he's probably gone, yeah, okay. But, you know, we were talking about Townsend before the pod, and he had a very similar run. Very similar. Where he looked very, very good. And he scored a lot of goals in a very short period of time. And everyone thought that he was really good. And that just, you know, he's at Crystal Palace now.
Yeah, fair enough. I mean, we shouldn't take away from, I think, you know, Jackie mentioned about the finishes. I thought the first goal was even better. Well, second goal was good, but I really enjoyed the first goal because he could have rushed it. And he kind of rode two challenges where both times he probably could have had a shot. It was a really nice goal for us to score, which there's no such thing as a bad goal, but you know.
Only if Nasser Chadli scores it.
Yeah, his goals counted for less, of course, as we remember. Poor Nasser.
Oh, bless him.
Nasser or Nasser?
Nasser.
Yeah, I know Nasser.
Nasser.
Yeah. Depends who he's meeting in the club. You can change it up.
Maker.
Well, so we mentioned about the quotes, say Poch had to convince him to stay and stuff like that. It's very much in line with the earlier quotes, or the quotes from earlier this week, where Poch was saying about players not having to ask to stay now. He doesn't need to convince anyone else to stay. Does that maybe put Son above our estimations a little bit? Have we maybe underrated what Son's importance is to the team if Poch treated him as one of those players he's had to convince to stay?
Do you ever think that it's because there wasn't anyone available at that period of time to come in and replace him?
I think we could have sold Son and got the money to buy Zaha. I think we would have gone.
Just going to say exactly that.
Yeah, I think it was on the cards.
I think, I don't know. I'm a bit torn about Son because I really want him to be good. Like, and I'm glad that he is good at the moment, but I'm just not convinced that it's going to continue. And I don't want to sound too cynical. I don't, because the finishes were fantastic, and the second one especially, that was a really good goal. But again, like, I keep caveating it with the fact that these are bad teams that he's doing it against. The Middlesbrough's defence at the weekend was fucking awful. It was abysmal in the first half. You know, Victor Valdes nearly headbutted his own defender. That's how bad it was. You know, it's like, so it's difficult, and I'm kind of in the boat of do it against City, and I'll be on board.
Mm.
I think what was overhanging for me during the Middlesbrough game is it was great to see him doing that. However, I couldn't help but just kind of have a bit of a flashback to Monaco, where he wasn't bad, but he didn't exactly shower himself in glory. And really, when you're buying a player for that much money, and when he comes with the reputation he does, those are the games where you need him to be having a performance like he had against Middlesbrough.
I would genuinely say that he was bad. I would say he was actively bad against Monaco. Because I was in the press box watching it, and he came off, and I had forgotten he was on the pitch.
It was a poor team performance.
It was, but he had that one golden chance at the start.
Yeah.
That if you're going to be that clutch player, to borrow an American term, you know, you score the goals when they matter, you have to score that. You have to put that away. And it was cleared, and it cost us.
I think it's interesting, though, and it's kind of, it's indicative of where Spurs are as a team nowadays, right? That you have a player like Son, who 10 years ago, if we had a player of that quality, he'd be by far probably the best player in our team, right?
Yeah.
But what we're splitting hairs over now is, can he perform in games against some of the world's best clubs, right?
And he's the guy that's winning us games on his own in the Premier League week and week. Is he good enough to do it in a bigger level?
Exactly. And it's almost weird that we're having to consider that, because it's not for a second I think Son is a bad player, but if we are trying to punch at this level now where few years down the line, we're going to be having to fill a 60,000 plus seater stadium. We're trying to compete in the Champions League and get back into the Champions League. We need players that can make that difference for us in massive games. Can Son do that? Don't know. Jury's out.
Fair points. Fair points all round. The game itself. So Dan Rattigan, friend of the pod, at DJ Rattigan.
Good lad.
With a very good lad. With our 2-0 up and cruising, oh my God, it's now 2-1 pattern. Roughly how many years have Spurs taken off your life? It is a good question. We touched on it last week about game management. And I still think it is probably one of the final kinks that needs to be, you know, yeah, ironed out in our game. And it was another example of it on Saturday, wasn't it? So it's about, for me, Saturday was very different to Sunderland. The Sunderland game for me was just, we did everything we possibly could to win that game 11-0. But we were just up against a goalkeeper that was in the right place at the right time and a stubborn defence, more stubborn than Middlesbrough. But against Middlesbrough, we had clear-cut chances to be 3-0 up at the break, let alone, you know, in the second half. Do you think it's a problem and is it going to catch us out? You know, we keep saying it's City on Sunday. If we do that, we could be in a bit of trouble there, couldn't we? Do you think it's a problem, enough of a problem for us to be concerned, let's say?
Yeah. Definitely.
Let's move on.
I think you have to say it because I think top teams either, they do one or two things. They either completely close the game down, like Barcelona. If they're, say, 3-0 up and they decide, right, that's enough. There is never any danger to their goal. They always just keep the ball and it's like, this is fine, this is quite leisurely. And at that point, you turn over and watch something else because you know it's going to be 3-0 Barcelona at full time. Or you do what the Sir Alex Ferguson Man United team of Ronaldo, Tevez, Rooney used to do. And we'll just win this game by as many goals as we can score. And we will just keep attacking you. And I think Spurs get caught in that middle ground of should we keep going and risk losing goals, or should we try and keep the ball? And I don't think at the moment, especially with Harry Kane injured, I don't think we have the capability really of doing the killing the game off by scoring loads of goals. So I think we need to get better at keeping the ball and killing the game. But I think as well, we have to remember how young we are.
Mm.
And I think we have to remember that we are prone to those rushes of blood. I think if Dele Alli could finish, for crying out loud, man, we would win games probably 4 or 5-0 because he seems to get a clear-cut chance every game and he always seems to fucking miss it in every game because he did it against Middlesbrough as well.
Yeah.
Where he just skied it. So, but I think it will come. I don't think it will be a problem against Manchester City because I don't ever think we will be in the position of we've just had 11 shots at your goalkeeper.
Yeah, fair.
Yeah, without a response. Mm. I don't think that will happen. Maybe on play, we did beat them 4-1 last season. But
the anniversary of which is today, I believe. Yeah, nice little bit of symmetry there. Jack, do you think, you know, were you really concerned at 2-0 that we were going to be in the position we were in the last 10 minutes of being only 2-1 up? And there was no siege. I mean, I don't think they were good enough to really lay siege. But you're always at risk, aren't you? You're one mistake away from drawing a game that you should have won comfortably. Is it a concern for you? Was it a concern for you on Saturday? Is it a concern for you going forward?
I think as I tweeted at the time, like, you're not proper Tottenham if you weren't expecting us to lose that game 3-2. But on a serious note, I think what bothered me about that a bit was that at 2-0, as opposed to looking to prevent us from conceding, I would hope for us to be able to make a substitution for Pochettino, that could turn the game into our favour because Middlesbrough were quite clearly in the ascendancy.
Yeah.
And they shouldn't be, you know, at all. And we needed a foothold in that. And yeah, he may have been saving him for Moscow, but at the same time, when you actively in a game, that's your focus, right? Mm-hmm. And you deal, that's part of management, you have to deal with it. If Lamela gets injured and he's missing for Moscow, I know it sounds very easy for me to say it in this position now, but it doesn't matter, like the focus is that game and securing those 3 points. So I don't know whether that's his concern or not, I'm speculating, but it felt like it needed a foothold in there. It felt like it needed us to kind of to push on, and it does consistently worry. Like I don't get me wrong, I'm not going Poch out or anything like that. You know, I'm a big believer in him, and I know he's a young manager and he's someone still learning his trade. But I think one of the things that we can consistently note about Pochettino is his hesitancy with substitutions, and at times his almost bizarre substitutions as well.
Yeah, definitely.
And I feel that's something that, you know, he definitely can work on.
I wonder if Monaco rattled him a little bit, because he got that team selection wrong. And there's not a lot of times that we can sit here and say that of Pochettino, that we can sit here and say that was a bad decision. But not starting Dembele against Monaco was a bad decision. And I just wonder if that maybe seeped into his thinking against Borough. I don't know. I mean, they're very different levels of teams, obviously. One's in the Champions League, one's at the bottom of the Premier League. But, you know, I just wonder if
Yeah, no, it's a fair point. It's definitely a fair point. I think we've been made to look silly by Poch a few times. And so for every time that we think there's been a wrong decision and it has worked out badly, you can always point to that. But the amount of times we all thought that there was a bad decision and it's turned completely on its head into a positive, I think he's still got enough in the bank for us to
a good far outweighs a bad than that.
Yeah, by a long, long way. A long, long way. And we should move on. So we had Janssen starting up front for the first, was it his first league start? It was, wasn't it? It must have been.
Yeah.
And he was criticised quite heavily on Match of the Day by Ruud Gullit, who was famous for leaving out the Premier League's best ever striker.
Harry Kane?
Yes.
Right. Okay.
Imagine that universe. Ruud Gullit's your manager. So he's obviously got... I don't know what his beef was, Gullit, because Janssen couldn't have done any more apart from scoring. And I know that's a very easy thing to say. And yeah, maybe you strikers, you should be expecting goals, but if your striker is assisting, holding the ball up, putting himself into every challenge that he can, and you're winning the game, and you've not lost any points because he's not scoring goals, I don't see what the problem was. Did you saw the match today? Did you agree with it, or
I didn't agree with it. I mean, I saw his point to an extent in the, you know, the examples he used to highlight and illustrate his point were ones in which, you know, you needed a number nine or a striker on the end of something in the box kind of thing. But which, whatever, you know, you can criticise perhaps Pochettino's system on that level. But I think what it just highlighted is just the lack of understanding as to how we play football, you know, how our team is set up and how we operate. That he's actually taken that as a criticism of Janssen is false. You know, it shouldn't be a criticism of Janssen. If he feels that's an incorrect way of playing, it's about the system. But of course, you know, you can't expect Match of the Day pundit to...
No, he's got a new book out about tactics.
Pre-ordered that.
Yeah, on the back of that.
Is it Shekshi?
Yeah.
Shekshi tactics.
You know, just quickly, he did an interview. The Football Weekly released, from The Guardian, they released a podcast that was, I can't remember who it was, I think it might have been Paul McKinney's, speaking to Ruud Gullit about his book, and the whole way through he's talking complete bollocks, not in a I don't understand football way. It's just some of the stuff that he was saying, I was like, what?
I kind of found it,
talking about?
Looking at the Match Today thing, I thought it was really arbitrary. I thought he was kind of just making up the rules as he went along a little bit, and I completely agree with Jack's point in that he just doesn't get it. Like, if he is a manager, like you said earlier, if he is a manager who wants his strikers to score goals, why did he drop Alan Shearer? Why would you do that? The one striker that you can always rely upon to score you a goal, you've left him on the bench. So anything that he says is moot.
No, yes.
Doesn't really matter.
Agree. What did you think of Janssen's performance yourself? Like, apart from the system and all that.
He's a lovely arse, doesn't he?
He's got an enormous arse.
Proper booty.
I've never seen anything like it.
Baby got back.
Yes, yeah. He's a big old boy. Yeah, but he's, as for his actual performance, he's actually used his arse in the first goal, didn't he? Because he pretty much sat on whoever their centre-back was.
I thought he played well. I mean, I wrote a piece beforehand kind of calling for him to step up in Kane's absence, and the fact that we needed Janssen. We need Janssen now for the next 2-3 months, however long Kane's out. Touch wood that it's like not very long.
Mm.
But I think he's good. I mean, the shirt worries me. Just the shirt he's wearing.
Well, number 9.
Yeah, God, they should have retired that when Soldado left, really. I don't know. I've not really seen enough of him being a striker to comment on him as a striker. I think if he was playing a 10, I would be like, he's great. He's really good. He can hold the ball up and he can lay it off. But when he's the tip of the spear, so to speak, when he's holding it up and he's always waiting for someone, I don't know how that's going to play as we go forward.
Mm.
You know, and the only goal he's scored so far has been against Gillingham from the penalty spot.
He needs a goal, doesn't he? Yeah, that's he needs a goal. Open play, like, and he needs just one where he can just twat it. And
Yeah.
Sort of, my lads keep swearing.
By all means. Dan's not here. The hammer of Kilpatrick does not hang above us. I do agree. I think Janssen had a couple of shockers against Gillingham. There was a couple of headers that were really quite bad.
Mm.
But I think everything else, as long as he's doing... He's still new. He's brand new.
He went 9 games without scoring for AZ Alkmaar last season. And then couldn't stop scoring after Christmas. So I kind of think that he's one of those strikers who needs to be set alight.
Mm.
To then carry on.
Let's not forget it takes Harry Kane a bit of time to warm up as well.
Exactly.
You know, so maybe it's just getting used to the system.
Yeah, and his fitness as well. He was leggy towards the end of the game. It
70
like,
minutes or so.
He looked like he had around Tom.
Well, he's piggy, isn't he? He's a bit piggy. He's probably not played that style of football in the running that far for and so intense for maybe ever. I don't know. But yeah, I'm still quite happy with him.
I'm convinced that every signing that we make is Poch led. So I have trust that Poch has seen something in him and he believes that he's going to be great for the system.
Yeah,
I do love sitting around in a pub drinking beer and talking about the fitness of like athletes. Yeah, fucking fat bastard. With his great fat ass.
Yeah, that's a completely fair point.
As I'm sitting here in my shorts that feel quite tight.
Second pint down. Yeah. Anything else to add on Middlesbrough? I thought that Paul Walker was excellent again. I think he's having his most consistent going into the back of last season as well. I think he's having some his most consistent annual year, calendar year that I think I've ever seen.
I think he's probably in the form of his life.
Mm.
To be honest, I think he's the best. He's the best right back in the country now.
Yeah, I think it's fair.
Comfortably.
I don't mean to cut that off too quickly, but I do think we need to talk about a little bit about Sissoko. So
concussion.
Well, he lost his man for the goal. Well, he didn't really lose him. He just kind of tried to dive through his back.
Like a glitch.
Yeah, it was a bit, actually. That's a good shout.
It was,
I'm still quite open-minded about Sissoko. I've got no real problems about it. I think if we're going to give Janssen the credit that he the time that he deserves, then we should be doing the same for Sissoko. And I thought he was okay in the first half. But I do think that we lost a little bit of control and I don't think he was helpful to that, put it that way.
Prefer him as a sub.
Yeah.
Yeah. I thought he was really good when he came on against Monaco. I thought he went really well because he was that injection of pace and
directness, isn't it?
Yeah. But against Middlesbrough, like the stats were not kind to him. I didn't think he had the best game. But I don't know if it's getting to grips with a system or what it is. I mean, I don't really know where Sissoko fits in, if I'm being honest. I don't really get it. I don't think he's near the starting 11 if everyone's fit. But he's a £30 million player.
Mm.
So I do worry that he will be shoehorned in at times. I don't think Poch is that sort of manager, but I do wonder if that will happen. Because it's like, it seems like he's going to be played as a winger.
Mm.
Which I find, I just think that's wrong. I just don't think that's his position, really.
Do you think one point, in terms of like the price tag, one point I can't remember if it was in an article or if it was on Twitter, but someone made this point that like if you consider the level that Spurs are punching at now and what we're trying to achieve, the reality is that number one, clubs are going to try and get as much as they can out of us.
Yeah.
And really to buy players that are of a standard or of a quality that can even be a squad player for us, they're going to be expensive footballers now.
Mm. Yeah.
If you look at what we've got on our team, they're all, you know.
I think that's true, but equally, I think, and I wrote this, I think that the fact that Sissoko was available literally all summer and we only pursued him on deadline day shows that he was literally the only person
available. Yeah, it suggests quite a lot, actually. Yeah.
He was the only person available. And lots of pieces since in the Telegraph, in, you know, outlets that I would trust for Spurs-related stories, have said that Pochettino said we need to buy him because he is all that we can get at the moment. And I think,
I think
that's really worrying.
Mm.
I find that really... And he might well mould him into a really great player. And if he goes to Real Madrid for 60 million in 2 seasons, then he's done something great for 2 seasons for us. And we'll probably be really grateful for that. But I just don't see him as a Poch player at all.
It's just a bit gutting that Mane was, what, £2 million more? Was he 32 mil, was he?
Yeah, 30. I think it might have been a little bit more. I think it's going to rise to about 38.
Pays a fucking Isco loan fee, man.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's all fair. Mane would have made a massive difference, I think.
So, Mane would have been perfect.
Yeah, for it's amazing, doesn't he?
I fucking hate that man. Because I tweeted about when Man United were pursuing Pedro.
Mm.
And they made a bid for Mane. And it was widely reported and Southampton rejected it. And I said, Mane isn't on Pedro's level.
Mm.
It's probably really wrong.
Yeah.
Who knew
what way round you were talking about, though? You could have said, he's not on Pedro's level because Pedro is just far beyond... Like,
he's garbage.
Not, yeah, he is a best
year. Yeah, I'm wrong that. I was right.
Yeah, there you go.
All along.
Thanks,
lads. Appreciate that.
Cheers, guys. We are going to go to our special Russian correspondent, Dan Kilpatrick. Now, Dan's going to record like 5 minutes, send it to me. Like I said, I've got absolutely no idea what it's about. It's probably in the press conference right now, but we're going to put it in post-edit. You can listen to that now, so don't worry, Dan fans. You'll get your weekly eargasm from Killy P. And we'll be back in about 5 minutes. This is Dan with a weekly look at Tottenham's young players and players out on loan. Only joking. I'm in Moscow. It's Monday night and I'm here ahead of Tuesday's Champions League game against CSKA in Moscow. I've just got back from Mauricio Pochettino's press conference. There's nothing I can tell you in terms of what he said that you weren't already read online or in Tuesday morning's papers. He was obviously very optimistic about Harry Kane's latest scan. He said the news was much, much, much better than they expected and was very positive. But he still refused to put a timeline on when Kane will be fit again. You'll probably read a fresh estimate in Tuesday's papers or elsewhere. I think having been in the presser and listened to Pochettino, who also spoke to us afterwards briefly, it's fair to say that no one really knows. The club's keeping their cards very close to their chest. I would think that he's still going to be out for another month. I wouldn't read too much into Pochettino saying 1, 2 or 3 weeks. But fingers crossed he can be back for Arsenal, which I think was 6 weeks yesterday. I think it was 6 weeks to the day from Sunday. So positive news certainly. On Dier, Dembele and Rose, it was slightly less positive. He suggested that Rose and Dier were further along than Dembele, which possibly means we could see those two against City, but I wouldn't have thought Dembele would be fit for that one, which is obviously a massive blow. As for Moscow itself, I haven't seen a single Spurs fan yet. I walked around for 3 or 4 hours today.
And either the Spurs fans weren't here yet, the 250 of them that is, or they were taking the club's advice not to wear club colours. They certainly hadn't taken over Red Square with a load of flags and banners and drums, etc. So pretty inconspicuous so far. But it was a lovely day in Moscow, and it seems to be a great city. A lot of people have been tweeting me asking, you know, are you afraid, stay safe, that kind of thing, and I'm sure it's tongue-in-cheek, but honestly I feel completely safe, and so far it's been a really, really good experience, and hopefully that'll also be true of the travelling fans. I'm not sure there's a great deal else I can tell you. The kickoff is 9:45 local time tomorrow night, so we're in for a late one. But I think, yeah, I'm quietly optimistic. The only other thing I could say, in fact, is that there could be some young players in the squad tomorrow. The Spurs youth team are playing a UEFA Youth League match against CSKA tomorrow afternoon. So it's possible the likes of Marcus Edwards, who have travelled here, won't play in that game and will be on the bench on Tuesday. It gives Pochettino a nice option anyway. All right, enjoy the rest of the podcast. Over and out.
Thanks, Dan. It felt like the sort of thing I had to do, but I wasn't very comfortable doing it, which is why it came out really awkward.
Is he dead? Has he been stabbed?
He might be dead.
I'm quite looking forward to seeing like the GoPro footage of, you know, you're going to see those like MMA gloves in view, like it's a first person shooting.
And Collymore running around.
Journalist!
That'd be Dan chatting.
That would be Dan, yeah.
Journalist won't work. What's the Russian for it?
I don't know. I learned Russian at school, which is one of the weirdest things. Well, one of the weirdest things about me. What's I did it. So we had, when I was in like year six, they did this thing. You'd learn German, like second language was German. And then they were like, people that were good at it could do this after school club that was Russian. So I just went, and I only remember about two phrases, which I passed on to Dan. None of them are please stop stabbing me, so I don't know how it's getting on, but I could say good evening, my name is Tom. Dobry vecher, menya zovut Tom. That's it.
Isn't it dostavenya, like the cheers?
Dostavenya is, yeah,
dostavenya,
cheers,
yeah.
Or something like that.
We know the drinking terminology.
Which says a lot, really, doesn't it?
That we're lads.
Yes.
Hashtag boys on tour.
Definitely the sort of people that Russian hooligans want to stab.
Yeah, absolutely. Also, I love the fact that you said, please stop stabbing me.
Yeah.
Like, please.
But it's Dan, so he would be polite about it, at least, as he's in his ball and curled up. No, Dan, I'm sure he's fine. But he's going to be enjoying things out in Russia. He sent us a few photos, which I'm sure he'll be tweeting soon. But it does seem to be a bit of a docile atmosphere out there. Again, that may be in contrary to what he has put in his piece in the 5 minutes in the break. Apparently the Russian Football Association had a meeting. I love this. They had a meeting with their hooligans. So all the ones that went to France and that caused trouble, they've had a meeting with them. So like, I guess they're on like a WhatsApp group or like an email, you know, a group.
It's
on Snapchat, email. Yeah, basically, yeah. So just come in for a meeting, we'll have a chat. I don't know what they've had to chat about. I don't know if it's a this is where they're staying sort of chat or a please don't fuck this up sort of chat. But would you go? If you had a ticket, would you go?
Yeah.
Would you?
Yeah, I would.
I don't think it's worth it.
I think that would... Yeah, I suppose I see the point, but also like it's just a trip, isn't it?
But it's not just a trip. I think that's it's a trip that it would be good to go and see the place. Like as a journalist, as Dan, it would be brilliant.
I think
you go, you've got that little extra layer of protection of you get to the ground for a reason. No one's going to be looking at the journalist entrance.
That's true, but it's also I think it's like if you go to say Bordeaux away, for example. I don't know why that pops into my head. I don't think they're even
that's a strange food. Example. Go on.
That's a bit of cheese and wine there.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. Like, it's really docile and what have you. But I would like to go to, like, a game like Fenerbahce away or Galatasaray away.
No fucking chance.
Because I think that would just be a fucking great atmosphere.
Do you masturbate with sandpaper as well?
Yeah. Well,
there's
no.
No. You couldn't. No. You couldn't pay me to go to Fenerbahce or Galatasaray away.
Welcome to hell. And then,
yeah, that's great. No, but right. On the telly, and I can look at it and go, "Oh, that looks scary." But if you're there, honestly, they trash the bus. Like they just don't give a fuck. They're crazy, like properly crazy.
People actually get killed.
Yeah,
that's the thing.
Yeah, it's not. I don't.
A noble death.
What for Spurs? Yeah,
I died after a 1-0 loss to CSKA Moscow. In abstract, I'd quite like to, but I don't know. I've got certain issues, to be honest, with CSKA actually being in the tournament as it is anyway.
Is this partly down to what? Well, is this entirely down to what's happened over the last couple of seasons with they were banned or they were fined for racism, weren't they?
Yeah.
And there was this partial stadium ban, which Man City they were the, if you like, victims of it in terms of fan base. And then they boycotted. Did they boycott one of the home games because of it? Was it the CSKA one at home? Yeah, it's an entirely fair point. Do you want to expand on it, or is that literally it?
I don't know. It's one of those things. Like I don't want to get too pious about this kind of thing. And I know you can draw out examples of, for example, the England captain calling someone a black cunt. You know, but at the same time, you look at kind of the culture that we just brush off as, oh, it's just the culture. It's just, you know, how things happen in Russia. I think there's a bit too much of an element of that, and I'm not too sure really what justification there is to still play as nicely with places like Russia as UEFA do.
Do you know what I really hated? Do you remember when the under-21s went out? And I think it may not have been Russia, but it was certainly
Serbia.
Serbia and Italy, Danny Rose. Rose got abused, and he kicked the ball into the crowd, and he walked off, and he kind of gave it some, like he sort of did that. He mocked the gestures that they were giving him and like gave the finger and that, and he just walked off, and it kind of sparked this huge brawl.
Weren't they told to go back on?
Well, I think it was the end of the game, but the thing that annoyed me was that the whole narrative behind it was that we gave them an incentive. Our players have done this awful thing of playing up to it. The best thing to do is play on, and sometimes it's just not. It's not ever really okay. But sometimes you just think, you know what? Your answer can be on the pitch.
If that happens,
but it's not the case in this. It's too way beyond what is acceptable in anything, let alone sport.
Like you say, it's this weird accepted kind of thought that, oh, this is just part and parcel. You know, people are going to say nasty things, but this is the game. This is what we have to. No, it's a fucking game of football. Mm. Like, this is supposed to be fun. This is sport. This is supposed to bring people together. Mm. And yeah, all right, okay. I'm far from kind of angelic in the respect that I won't, you know, shout obscenities at an opposition player or something like that if I've had too many beers or something like that before a game, because I'm a proper geezer, you know. But at the same time, just this. I just don't get it, this idea that people are somehow, you know, not culpable for their own actions. That, oh, they just do that because that's what they do. It's bollocks.
I do think that the important thing to remember is that if you were to, say, meet that player outside one-on-one and say the same thing, you wouldn't say the same things, because if you do take yourself out of it, you get the impression that there's so much of this entrenched anger and just pure, simple racism of these people, that they actually are quite dangerous. And they would, on the street, they would attack, you know, somebody completely different to them. It's insane the level that they take it to.
It's what you say is pure and simple racism. That's it.
Mm.
That's what it is. And I wouldn't have any objection to any of our players kicking the ball into the crowd and walking off if that happened.
Mm.
During the game, if that happened, the player picked the ball up, kicked it in, I would be behind them 100%. You know, walk off the pitch, absolutely fine. I think I agree that CSKA shouldn't be there. I think it's horrible. It smacks of political pandering as well from UEFA and FIFA, because Russia have got the fucking World Cup as well. And I think that's going to be a tinderbox that is going to go up. And I kind of gave it the big one with CSKA, but I know there is every chance that I will be sent to Russia to cover it, and that would worry me.
Mm.
It would worry me, I can't lie. I think if I went to a Spurs game, like, I expect to go with my mates, and I expect to have a couple of beers, and I expect to have a laugh. And if we lose, I walk out and I swear a bit, and I'm like, oh, you know, that was terrible. If we win, it's great. It's one of the best days ever. I feel like with the CSKA thing, it's always going to be, there was that experience of, we saw this racist abuse, or, you know, we saw these horrors out there. It is... It's not good that they're in the competition.
No, there's nothing good to come of it. And it doesn't. Really, no lessons are learned from it either.
No, absolutely.
I do just want to quickly say as well, as a counterbalance, like, I totally understand that everywhere has its share of dickheads.
Mm.
And I'm sure, you know, although I'll happily say Russia probably has more than its share of dickheads than most places, there are a lot of very brave people who are Russian that, you know, some like Pussy Riot, for example, you know, that stands off, you know, off the top of your heads. And various other artists, like there's that artist that nail gunned his scrotum to the floor of, I'm not quite sure.
There's a recognition out there, but it's just not being really acted on. They're still seen as, you know, the outsiders, if you like. We should move on to the game itself, really. But or rather, let's say the team itself. So they drew their first game with Leverkusen 2-2 while we were losing to Monaco.
Yeah.
They're unbeaten in their league. They're second behind one of the others that always wins it.
Zenit,
isn't it? No, they beat Zenit. It might actually be Zenit, but I know they beat them.
I haven't got any research. That was a complete guess.
I've got no idea about them. The only player that I recognise, so I obviously did a little bit of Wikipedia. They've got Armand Traoré, the striker from Monaco. The big fucker. Yeah, massive.
Did he go to Everton for a bit?
You mean Lucina Traoré? Armand Traoré.
Yes,
left
sorry.
Back.
Who's Armand Traoré? Yeah, no, you're right. Back. Sorry, yeah.
Yeah,
you're right.
An accidental mariner there.
Yeah.
Hashtag it.
Yeah. Let's move on from that awkward moment. They've got him up front, and they've got Zhagoev.
I tipped him when I was starting out journalism and stuff. I used to write for this betting site, and I tipped him to be Euro 2008's best player, Zhagoev.
He did all right, didn't he?
He did all right. He's just never really kicked on from that early promise that he had, because he was meant to be the next best European playmaker,
right?
And he just isn't. Like he's good, fine. Like he's good, probably in the Russian league. Like he probably gets a shitload of assists. I don't know. I haven't looked it up, but I don't know if he's that much of a danger. I think there's name recognition in Europe because probably he has been linked a lot with big clubs in England. I seem to remember him being linked with Manchester United at one point.
He's one of those that sort of, it's a little bit like a kind of Europa League player that comes good.
Absolutely.
You know, Conor Pianka and Yarmolenko, all these players that are like on the cusp of it, but never goes
got
through.
Over the line for it. Yeah, I think CSKA are just a bit, I mean, they're a worry away, purely because of the occasion and where you're playing the game, but I think we should be beating them. I really do. I think we should be beating that kind of team.
Despite the fact that, so the news came out today that Rose, Dyer, Dembele, Kane, obviously, but Sissoko as well, didn't travel, let alone not going to start. They just didn't even travel. Bit of a weird one on Dyer and Dembele, because as far as I was concerned, it was cramp at the end of the Sunderland game, and they were even in contention for Borough. So I don't know if Poch is thinking that City is so important on Sunday that we can't even risk them travelling out to Russia.
I think there's an element of that.
Yeah. Well, we were saying before we started recording, Harry, that we had Arsenal, pretty much this exact same time last year when we beat City 4-1. 3 days before that, we played a weakened team against Arsenal in the Cup.
Fazio at centre-back.
Debut. Loads of, like, just... It was well under strength.
Fazio scored an own goal for Roma yesterday.
Did
he? Sunday, sorry.
Your second team, of course. It was slowly just being taken over by people that... It's incredible, isn't it? The record that they've got. So it's Fazio, Chesney...
Yeah, Vermaelen. They were trying to get Wilshere in summer. Like, yeah, pretty rank.
You're being trolled by Serie A.
Yeah, they just don't want me, mate. They don't want me making another second tier podcast for it.
Yeah. Does it worry that we've not taken it? Because four out of those five players are first, like, they're first 11, aren't they? Rose, Dier, Kane, and Dembele are our best 11. In our best 11. Is this a concern, or are you quite happy that maybe we've now got the squad that's able to go out to somewhere like Cesca and in a difficult environment and maybe go and get a result there and then come back with those four, well, three out of the four, maybe prepared to play someone like City?
You know what, I've been a lot more worried about this if Harry Winks hadn't looked like the sort of player he has done so far. Yeah. And I think, in a way, actually, I quite like the idea of Wanyama and Winks as opposed to Wanyama and Dier in the middle, to be honest. Mm. I mean, I've kind of beaten that drum of, you know, give Dier and Wanyama a bit more time, give them a bit of a chance, but it's just a bit discordant, isn't it? It doesn't seem to be quite there. And I feel like Winks could probably complement him quite well. As for the others, I mean, I think we've got like for like. I mean, let's be honest, I think we should be beating CSKA. I think one big thing for us, I don't know if you guys are aware, but the stadium in which they're playing is essentially a new stadium for them as well.
Yeah, I heard this.
So,
actually, yeah.
So the concerns we have about Wembley, so on and so forth, I think this will be their third game in their stadium now. Bigger pitch, so on and so forth, everything. That,
is it plastic pitch?
I don't know, actually. I'm not sure.
Heard rumours that it's plastic pitch. That's aren't special. They all plastic pitch? In Russia,
probably
kind of need to be, don't they?
Yeah, I think I agree with Jeff a lot. I think we should win the game. I mean, my main worry is Davis at left back. Really,
don't get me started, mate.
I think other than that, we'll be okay. But you know, I put a tweet out after the Monaco game that, you know, probably the big loss that we had was not having Rose against Monaco. Because Davis isn't anywhere near as effective in the final third. And I got a reply just saying, Davis doesn't know what the final third is. And I was like, that is very genuine. It's genuinely true. Mm. Like, he doesn't push on at all. I think it doesn't really worry me about Dier and Dembele. I kind of expected that. I did think that Poch would rotate. And I think it's probably worked out quite well for Poch because he can quite easily play it off in the post-match presser if he needs to, that they just weren't quite there fitness-wise. Mm. But they should be ready for City. You know, he can paint the picture that they weren't quite there. But completely agree with Jack in that Winks is probably going to complement Wanyama really well. I think that
called him a big
work.
Brother in pre-season. Wink said that when it was like playing next to a big brother, he looks after him and stuff like that. That sort of environment, I do quite like that a little bit, because Wanyama's going to need to, he's going to need to step up in.
I think he's a great player.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of Wanyama.
That chant for him that he retweeted as well. I'm a big fan of that.
He's a good lad.
I would genuinely like to see Nkudu as well. I want to see him soon. Because talking about Twitter, I just think that he's kind of won Twitter generally in the Premier League.
Yeah.
He just seems like such a great dude on Twitter. And it's like, just put him in and see if you can back this up, please.
Well, Poch said he hasn't got very good English. So I reckon he's just on Google Translate all the time.
He probably is, yeah.
I quite like that.
I love that.
Do you know what I'd do against Cesca? I'd put Vertonghen left back and Vimmer in with Alderweireld. I like Vertonghen.
I like that, mate. I like that shout.
I mean, it worked well against Sunderland because we had that penetration down the left.
Sunderland, though.
Yeah, but I don't know. I think that's good enough.
I think Vertonghen's a decent left back. I know he hates it, but I think he's good.
Yeah,
that's my problem with it, the fact that he doesn't like it.
Yeah.
But then I think he didn't like it under managers that I don't think he had a lot of time for. I don't think he really cared that much for AVB.
And to be fair, I would like to see him get a surly with Pochettino. It's not going to wash, is it?
It'd be the highest profile player that did it. That'd be good.
I can remember coming on this pod and saying that Vertonghen was a fucking liability.
Hmm?
I can remember. Was that under Poch?
I didn't think Vertonghen was going to end the season as first choice. I thought Dier would, but that was before Dier was moved into central defensive midfield. And I have apologised for that, and I don't appreciate you bringing it again.
I genuinely did, with all sincerity, say we should just release Moussa Dembélé a couple of years ago, so you know, just to add some balance to.
I'll
take a banter bullet for you there.
There's a tweet.
Banter bullet. Wow. Yeah. Amazing.
Like it.
Love
there's
that.
A tweet so, like, floating out there in the ether from me that just says, ha ha ha, fuck off Moussa Dembélé, after he misplaced a pass against, I think it was Man United, first game of the season, when he was playing right wing. If it happened now, it'd just be like, he's just well out of position. That's me, though. Pure agenda.
No agenda.
No agenda, no.
Well, I think one of the worst ones ever is all in caps. Me just saying, yes, you have read that correctly. Spurs have just signed Roberto Soldado and Paulinho for a combined £60 million or something like that, and being really ecstatic about it.
It's funny, isn't it? That tweet now
got ridiculous numbers like about a year or so ago.
You're a big fan of retweeting my
I love it,
the thanks for everything Redknapp, can we have Moyes please.
Oh, which
deserves, yeah, but at the time,
no, I've got no. The best one that I like going back to, and I'm going to dig him out of it here, completely uncalled for, but I'm sure I'll get him back. Jay Jaffa at goal, he's got fair play, but he tweeted, don't you find it funny that footballers just run around using their legs?
Right.
And I just, I'm retweeting, every other month. I'm just like,
in what context is he saying?
Yeah, what point was he trying to make?
Yeah, he just came completely out of the blue, like they just used their legs. And I was like,
okay, wow.
Another good one, just quickly before, because I can tell you're eager to move on, but I would... friend of the show, Jim, at Stylish Riot, I think he went on a rant to me where I'd said something like, you know, I'm not too sure this is going to be a mark of progress, blah, 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 when we signed Pochettino. So, you know, that was kind of me mugging myself off then. He said, I think, with all sincerity, Jim delivered, progress, under Levy, you're having a laugh, mate. And I think it was ended on a hashtag Levy out as well.
So, yeah, there's a good character that he's playing there.
Nice one, Jim.
Nice one, Jim. Finally,
not
Jim
one
gets
brick.
Called out. Yeah. Right, let's move on to Man City on Sunday, because we have referenced it. We should definitely point towards Rule the Roost here, Jack, because...
Don't do that, mate.
No, A, it's a good pod, and I enjoy it, and I really... My favourite bits are when you do manage to speak to people from who we're playing coming up, because you do tend to get quite balanced people, even when we've got the Arsenal guys on. They always seem really good, and this week you've spoken to Rob Pollard, who is it typical City that he's
writing? He used to write for typical City, but he's Manchester Evening News now.
Oh right, okay.
Yeah, he's gone up in the world.
I would like to say
we were part of that success, probably.
Absolutely.
We put him on the map.
Absolutely. Yeah. But without giving too much away, you did chat to him, and he is a decent voice on what's going on at Man City. Yeah. They've obviously had a perfect start. It couldn't get any better for them. Certainly our biggest test of the season, but they've kind of given us the vibe that they really feel like it's their first test as well, don't they?
Yeah, that's exactly what he said. It was just that this is the game that they've been kind of looking forward to dash most nervous about, because they feel it's their first test against a proper team, as he put it.
Big old nod to United that as well, isn't it?
Yeah,
because they went away to Old Trafford and beat them. But
it's a proper flip of lads. It's Tottenham as well, isn't it?
Mm.
It is a bit, actually.
That is true, yeah. Amigos, it's Tottenham.
Amigos. I mean, be careful. It's Tottenham.
I mean, like, what are the big kind of points he made? Is because I was trying to get from Rob essentially, like, how much of what we're seeing now is a kind of Pep effect, in the respect that he's made changes to the way they play football, and you're seeing that directly have an influence upon the results? Or is it just the fact that they no longer have what seems to be a kind of like cadaver on the sidelines in Pellegrini? Well, come on, like,
that's true. It's the way you say it.
There was a flag in the City End that used to say "this charming man," didn't it? And I always felt that charming should have had inverted commas around it, because there was, I liked him, but what? There was no charm.
Every presser he ever did was so dull. It's like, we've got the Man City process. Should we like prepare any breaking news? And everyone's like,
it's just, you know, like a week after Halloween when you still haven't thrown out your pumpkin. Pellegrini.
Sorry. Yeah, go on.
No, he just kind of pressed on us that mostly, like, the biggest change Pep's made is that it feels like there's more of a spirit there, that there's an ethos. And a lot of what he was saying was echoed in what we've said about Pochettino, in that it's not really like this grandstand change. You know, Pochettino seems to be, it's somewhere between Redknapp, it's somewhere between Villas Boas. It's kind of free-flowing with structure. And that seems to be what he said.
Organised chaos.
That's it. And everything that he's heard thus far from Guardiola is that, you know, we keep the ball, it means the opposition don't have it, and it means they can't score a goal. And that's essentially the cornerstone of his philosophy. We keep the ball and just go forwards. But the biggest change he was saying is that, like, you know, Pep has put in this whole kind of thing whereby it's, you know, away games always go to the fans. Every player has to go to the fans and, you know, clap them off. He doesn't make, so when they play home games, there's things like, you know, the team don't have to stay in a hotel anymore. They can stay at home with their families and discuss, because apparently it was a big thing.
They stayed in Wales as well, didn't they?
For away games.
Swansea, because they had Swansea in the cup and then Swansea in the league.
You're right.
They stayed in Wales. They didn't come back and then go again. Pep was like, no, we'll just stay here and train and keep that momentum, basically.
He's a manager, not a coach, isn't he? Which is exactly what Poch is now. It's everything about the club is managed by him. It's what's the best for it, apart from pre-season friendlies, obviously. It's interesting.
But I think what he did press is that, you know, it's not, like, Spurs fans, we need to shake this idea that we're a good Spurs side. We're a good Spurs. No, we're a good team. We are a good team now. We are kind of looked at in that bracket of we're a top four side. We're a struggle for anyone now. And I guess I'm assuming that's what Pochettino's hammering into our players now.
Yeah, quite rightly as well.
Definitely nice. Definitely. I think City, I mean, the game is huge, I think. I've been really impressed with City, and I wrote that, like, the title is theirs to lose already. And I stand by that. But I think I've been interested to see Pep spending the money he's spent and getting the results he's been getting, because it does look like City are playing like a Pep team already.
Yeah.
And at the start of the season, I did kind of anticipate it taking maybe 6 months for it to properly bed in and you to see the ticky-tacka goals that they were scoring. But against Swansea, they scored a beautiful goal.
Mm.
Like, I think every player touched the ball. I'm pretty sure every player touched the ball, which is mad. And I think it's going to be a real test for both teams, because the press, is that going to stop City's passing game? Are we going to have the ball enough to make a real impression on it? Or is it going to be a case of having to be short, sharp, quick counter-attacks?
It's two good brains going up against each other, isn't it?
It really is. And there are real similarities between the two of them. Like, I don't want to say that Pochettino is going to be as good as Guardiola, because I wouldn't want to do that. But equally, I think Poch has less resources than Pep does. Like, he can't go and buy De Bruyne, for example. He can't go and spend 38 million on Leroy Sané, who is a completely unproven, you know, Bundesliga prospect. And I think it's a real test for both managers, I would say, more than the teams. I'm more intrigued by the managerial matchup and the tactical matchup than just the teams going up against each other.
Well, you mentioned De Bruyne there, but he's confirmed as out. It's 4 weeks or something, isn't it, that he's likely to be out for. Are you doing that face of it's not 4 weeks, or you're excited that he's out?
Excited that he's out.
Good. Yeah. It feels like he's the guy, doesn't it? I mean, Sterling is on unbelievable form, and if you put him versus Walker is going to be one of those interesting battles. But I think De Bruyne is the guy, isn't he? He's kind of the
that guy, Kev.
It is a bit, yeah.
One of the points that Rob made, though, I think what bothers me slightly is, like, De Bruyne is obviously, he's been a standout player in the league this year, but at the same time now, David Silva's coming back, you know?
Yeah.
So they lose Kevin De Bruyne, they've got David Silva.
Their squad depth is ridiculous.
Yeah. And like, David Silva is, like, less... Let's not be under any illusions. Like, you should not underestimate a player of that ability.
No,
like,
no,
he's
not.
He'd walk into any team in the Premier League.
Mm-hmm.
I think he'd walk into any team in the world.
Yeah. So yes, De Bruyne is great, but you know,
there's other worries, definitely. Yeah.
De Bruyne strikes me as like that early adapter of the philosophy. Like, you know, like when you get a new boss and you try really hard to impress them by like, look at all the work I can do. It seems like De Bruyne is doing that. And he's like, look, I'm going to keep my place.
That strikes me as Sterling, though. I think Sterling, I know he had a bit of a stinker last season and he had the Euros where so much ridiculous shit was thrown his way. But Sterling just feels like that guy that Pep has maybe...
In
a little bit of the way of what Poch did with Danny Rose, he immediately identified a player that he thought, you know, like,
yeah.
I like you and you've got something in you that I think, you know, I'm going to work with, and it's just showed immediate dividends.
I think I don't know if Sterling said this or if it was a comment made on him, but I think Sterling said that he sat down with Pep and Pep just said to him, I know how good you are. And that was all Sterling needed.
Mm.
Like, he was like, I can just go from here. And that goal he scored against Swansea was ridiculously
good.
Yeah,
really good.
Like,
Cole Norton, wasn't it?
It was so...
That he got it, he'd done up.
Ended his career.
He did, basically.
Yeah,
sent
him for, like, a hot dog and a magazine and a newspaper.
Yeah.
And all
yeah,
of the things
yeah.
that you can send him for.
Yeah.
It was stupidly good. I think Sterling's great. I'm really intrigued to see how Kyle Walker does it.
Mm.
How Kyle Walker deals with him. If he deals with him. I don't know. I think Sterling is probably...
Kyle will love him.
Sterling and Mane, I think, are the form wingers at the moment in the league.
Yeah.
I do like Sterling. I love him, but I think Kyle will have him.
I can't make that bolder prediction ahead of City. City is up there for me with Arsenal and Chelsea as the games that really get me in the
Do you get the impression that Poch is saving himself for this?
Yeah.
You know, Dembele, Dyer, Rose is in full training and has been for 2 weeks, and I just get the impression that he's looking at it thinking, I could put Rose in against Borough, I could put him in against Cesca, but if he breaks down, he's not going to be available for City, and he wants him available for City.
Big time, mate. There's previous there as well, you know.
Yeah, there is. Yeah.
Pochettino, he took Espanyol to a victory at the Nou Camp over Guardiola, and Guardiola was so patronising afterwards. You know, he gave him the whole, it's nice to see a small team come here and blah, 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 blah. You know what Pochettino's temperament's like. He's not going to have liked that.
He doesn't forget.
I don't know if you've seen it. There's a fantastic compilation on YouTube of Pochettino as a player.
Right.
And after having watched that, you see, if you look at the game at Stamford Bridge, having seen Pochettino as a player, you see where it's come from now. It really is so clear. I'll send you the link afterwards. But, you know, he is all about passion. And he's a man that... He's a bit old school, Pochettino. That's what I like about him. Like, he is progressive, but there's still that old kind of, I don't know, mafia-type mentality to him. Where
he's
it's
cold,
like,
isn't he?
Yeah.
But, yeah.
But he warms to the people that he wants to keep as friends. It's that keep your friends close, your enemies even closer kind of thing, isn't it?
Look at the way he's treated the players that he's exiled.
Yeah.
Like, it's just like, mate, fucking do one.
They've come out and there's just a red X painted on their door.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You know, horse's head in their bed.
Like, it is.
All of
that
sort of stuff. I certainly think Poch is saving himself for City. I think it's the biggest game of the season so far, definitely, for both clubs. I don't expect it to be... Like, I used to hate it because I used to expect City to beat us and beat us badly. But now I hate it because I think it's an important game for us. Like, that's why I hate it so much.
Mm.
And I think if anyone can get the better of Guardiola, I think Poch has to be quite near the top of that list.
Yeah.
I really do.
Just really quickly, you know, I'll tell you what I do love about it, though. is the fact that the Redknapp season, when we first sealed Champions League and we beat them in that Champions League final to seal fourth place.
Crouchy.
Yeah, and we were both kind of like level pegging, and it felt like us being there was the culmination of years and years of focused spending, hard work, a youth academy son and so forth. And I do hate chucking this at City, but I think it's valid. They got there because they were Chelsea light, you know. Yeah. They just chucked a load of money at it. But the thing I love is the fact that, yeah, okay, they have won the league a couple of times. That does separate us. But at the same time, we're still managing to punch at that level.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
It's testament to us, and it's testament to our resolve. And it just, every time we get one over them, it just makes me think, come on, that Eriksen winner last season was that.
It wasn't in any way, oh my God, we're beating City.
No.
It wasn't that. It wasn't a fuck you kind of...
With your fucking money.
Yeah, it was.
I remember that day, like, really well. And I remember watching the game. My mum is a mad Spurs fan. She loves it. She's so close, it's mad. And we were watching the game together. And when Eriksen scored... Like, I can't remember such a cathartic moment. Like, it felt so huge. Mm. And, like, I love the game. Even under AVB, when he made those two substitutions and we came back and we beat them 3-1 at home.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
And Bale scored the chip.
Mm.
And you had the Huddleston really good pass.
Yeah, yeah.
And Defoe scored that ridiculous goal.
Yeah.
I feel like there's a rivalry there.
I feel like Spurs, definitely.
Fucking important.
It's a new wave rivalry.
Definitely.
Yeah.
And I feel like it's a game, it's almost becoming almost a hipster's derby, a little bit.
Yeah, no, I think
because
that's a fair point.
Pep versus Poch, and there's lots of different subplots going into it.
There you go. Got your round of applause.
Thank you.
There's the Masons back, guys.
But I think it's really important. And I would play a rested, rotated team against Cesca to beat City.
Yeah, I would. Yeah, I'm on board for that now.
Yeah.
We need to move on because we are running short on time and the Masons have started. We should talk about...
Partly because of comedic value,
but partly because it is an interesting discussion to have. Harry, you're covering West Ham for Goal.
Yeah.
Just moved into a new stadium and they are doing about as badly as they could possibly have feared. So they've won one game and they've lost...
Beat Bournemouth
at home. But they just got spanked, royally spanked by Southampton. And it was a...
Terrible.
It could have been anything. It was a really bad performance.
To be fair, Mark Noble came off and said it could have been six. And he was right.
Well, Mark Noble came out and said like it couldn't get any worse. Which I just feel like, as a West Ham player... Do you really want to be going there? Yeah. Do you really want to be going there? Because that's the sort of thing that gets played at the end of the season when they've been relegated and they're playing against whoever, like Brighton in the Championship, and then it's going to just get played over and over, isn't it? Just couldn't get any worse. And then Brighton scoring a last-minute winner away at West Ham or something. Because it bloody could. But in a context of Tottenham, we've got a new stadium coming within the next 18 months or however long, probably a little bit longer than that. You know, there's lessons to be learned here, aren't there? And alright, we're building a specialist stadium that is for football and it's not built for a different sport that they've just tried to customise into a football stadium and failed. Yep. And they're going to continue to fail until they address that. We're not doing that. But there are things that we need to learn, aren't there?
Definitely.
What do you feel like are the key things that we need to learn from this and even from Arsenal as well, with them moving to the Emirates, because that has, in part, because they split up the season ticket holders, I think there was North Bank something or other that used to sit together and they split them up. There was a singing section which they just haven't got going again. There are things that we need to take into account, aren't there?
Definitely. One, fix the fucking lift for when I'm there. Fix the fucking lift. That
what's
was ridiculous.
I went
to the Juventus game, you know, when they opened
the stadium.
I love that this is the start of it.
I had to climb like 13 sets of stairs to get to my seat because the press box is like fucking high. It's ridiculous. For starters, don't have a running track.
Can you see? Can you? Are you able?
You can see. Like, I'm not going to lie. I know that I'm a Spurs fan. I think the stadium is really good. I think the Olympic Stadium is good.
Mm-hmm.
The view is. People are going to laugh about it. People are going to joke about it. I found the view to be really good for myself. Like when I was there, and I can only speak for me. You know, that and there was the overwhelming smell of skunk when I was in the press box. But other than that, like I could see, and it was a really good view. I think if you're further back, you're fucked. Like, because it's like being Rosehead at Wembley. Like, yeah. You may as well bring your binoculars.
But even Wembley has only got a 10 meter gap between the back of the goal
the
and
running,
you.
The running track, I think it sucks the atmosphere out.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously covering West Ham and, you know, talking to West Ham fans and what have you, certain sections of the support believe that, well, they did believe until they fucking blew Upton Park up, that fighting in the stands would lead to them going back to Upton Park.
You're kidding.
No, I'm not. Genuinely, they believed that.
What planet do they live on, though?
Honestly. If they were fighting,
I hadn't even considered that. Had you not even thought
it would lead to them being thrown out and they would have to go back to Upton Park. But the problem being, they're filming a movie at Upton Park at the moment. I don't know if you know this.
No.
I don't know if you've heard about this. I'm plugging a West Ham film, I'm sorry. It's going to be fucking terrible.
It's not Green Street 4, is it?
Pierce Brosnan's in it, and it's about a whole stadium crowd being held hostage. I'm not joking. I'm not. Honestly, I'm not. Being held hostage. And that's why you've probably seen the video of Upton Park being blown up.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's for a movie scene. It's for a movie scene.
Pierce Brosnan.
Oh, my God.
No joke. So that's what Upton Park's become. So they're not going back. They're not. And I think the lessons that we need to learn is, I think they're probably, I love the laughter.
Oh, just, I think, how do you keep a stadium? Yeah, go on.
Sorry. Watch the film, man.
No.
One, I think we need to listen to fans.
Mm-hmm.
One. Because no West Ham fan wanted that fucking running track. None of them wanted it there. But one, listen to the fans and take on their feedback. Two, don't make it too cheap. And I say that because West Ham genuinely had to issue a statement that they would throw out fans who were entering the stadium wearing different football kits.
Yeah.
Because of the pictures of like kids in Man United strips. And what have you? When
I would just as devil's advocate, isn't that fairly standard practice though? Like,
I don't know, but they were forced to issue this statement because there were pictures of fans in the home end wearing Man United kits.
I think it is standard practice, you know, but I do think that they as a club had to tell the people that own the stadium, this is standard practice.
Yeah,
you're
exactly.
Not allowed to do it. Yeah.
Exactly. I think you need to train your stewards. And I say that kind of half as a joke because no one knew what was going on when I went to the events again. No one knew where anything was for a start. But also, like, you need your stewards to be knowledgeable. You need your stewards to act fast. But there was a great tweet about this steward telling a guy at 3-0 during the West Ham Southampton game, mate, you need to sit down.
Yeah.
And the guy looked at him and said, I'm fucking going home, mate.
Yeah.
And he just walked out. And it's, you don't want that.
Mm.
So educate your stewards. I think our move will be fine because it is literally next to the current stadium.
And it's a football stadium.
People aren't going to get lost for a start. And also, everyone's going to get there. It will have a great atmosphere. I think the thing with the Olympic Stadium is, one, it's too big for the way West Ham play. The pitch is too big. They've got the pitch dimensions wrong. And they're fucked. They are, because they've got to a point where they are chronically mismanaged by the fact of they wanted Lacazette as their main striker this summer and they got Andre Ayew.
He then got injured.
That is not on the same level.
Mm.
That is like setting out for Lionel Messi and signing Soldado. It's not the same.
Mm.
And then they went and got Cagliari from Boca Juniors, who no one knows.
Zaza as well, just looks
and
awful.
Zaza, yeah, he's not a good player at all. And I think they expected, and I'm not joking when I say this,
they expected to be in the title race this season?
My big concern in terms of, like, I think there's a false equivalency somehow with the kind of with the Olympic Stadium and with the new Spurs Stadium, in the respect that there's like a conflation of issues with West Ham's new stadium, because I think there are things around it in respect to, like, the running track, the fact that, you know, it's not stewarded very well. West Ham are playing like shit at the moment.
They don't own the thing.
No, yeah, exactly. And also the fact that they've been torn from their routine. It's very, very new for them. They can't go to the same pubs. They can't do this, they can't do that. Spurs will have a lot of that sorted. But I think one of the things that we do have to prepare ourselves for, really, is that it will be different. It still will be different. Yeah. And I think one of the things, the main thing for me is the capacity. It all comes down to the capacity. It comes down to the fact that, you know, let's be brutally honest here, we don't sell out every single game at White Hart Lane as it is. Now we're going to move to a stadium that's twice the size. The way in which the club remedies a problem like that is they put tickets on international ticket selling websites, thus meaning we have tourists that come to the ground. And that is, like, we cannot rage against that machine. Like, that is part and parcel of modern football and the modern game. What I think the club need to be very careful with doing is managing the blocks and where those fans are sat.
Yeah, you, like, have to. There's a lot of the relationships. I think the point that my mate made when we were at Wembley was that there was a guy behind us who was moaning the whole time, saying, you know, we want this 60,000 seat stadium, we can't even sing when we're at Wembley in this big night. And at half time, my mate turned to me and went, right, the guys have come, but let's just take it rationally. You're splitting apart people that have built relationships from people that you know for no other reason than going to a football stadium every week and sitting around them. And some of those go back more than 10 years, you know? So you have to take that into consideration. If the very least you can do is sit those people together same sort of... Everyone wants to sit next to their mates, which is fine, but you learn to live with the alternative.
I think the point is, like, I don't think that will matter if Spurs are top of the league.
Yeah.
Ultimately.
Yeah, it's about how we play.
So it's only really a complaint for West Ham because they're bottom.
Yeah, that's fair.
Like, and I think that's a key point. Like, I get it, but I think the key thing with Spurs' new stadium is it's ours. Mm. We built it. We paid for it. We suffered through not being able to get Isco when we wanted him and what have you, and so on and so forth. And in January, we'd probably be linked with this £30 million striker that we can't buy because, oh, we've got a new stadium. We have to go through that toil. West Ham didn't.
Mm.
That's the key. West Ham had Upton Park, and then they had the Olympic Stadium, the London Stadium. That's such a pro Evo name.
And the badge, the new badge, they just look like pro
it's
Evo.
It's terrible. And also their third kit looks like something you wear at a BNP march. Yeah, it's awful.
It was bad.
It's like,
it's got an actual Union Jack on
it,
doesn't it?
Actually,
it's so tin pot.
Okay. I genuinely think that West Ham are reaping what they sowed.
Yeah.
I really do believe that. And I think with Tottenham, it's a case of, we've built this. This is ours. It's in our place. You know, we've not moved it. It's the same tube stations. Like you say, it's the same pubs.
Yeah.
It's the same pre-match haunts. You might not be sat next to the same bloke. If we're beating Arsenal 3-0 at home, does it fucking matter?
No.
Probably not.
Fair point. Very, very fair point. We do need to end. We've run over by a long way, but excellent points all around. It's going to be interesting. Friend of mine made a point the other day as well about all those pubs that stay in the same place. What the hell are they going to do next year? Because you don't get that Saturday that can keep them afloat for the next week.
At Wembley?
Yeah, I don't know. It might be a bit different.
How long were you in the queue out of Wembley?
About 45 minutes. Until I was when I left the doors at Wembley and got onto a tube, I'd say at least 45 minutes. And
mine
I bought
was 2 hours.
Really?
Yeah.
Can you just, you're tall, you could have just stepped over people.
I don't, what, I'm not literally the BFG.
You could, you should be, you should do it. You should play this to your advantage, Harry. Guys, thank you so much for coming down. Harry, thank you for coming down for your debut for the season. It's been long overdue. The last time you were on, we actually lost to West Ham, so there's a slight symmetry.
And I said we beat them easily as well.
Yeah, then we had Arsenal and we drew that.
It's your fault then, isn't it, mate?
Yeah. Yeah. You put the rockers on that one. Thank you very much for coming down, Eric.
Thanks for having me, mate.
Great to have you on, mate. Thank you very much for doing a pod crossover.
Pleasure.
It's been great having you down.
Yeah,
and,
lovely. Thank you.
Obviously, listen to Rule the Roost as often as possible because it's very, very good, particularly this week with Rob Pollard on, because I'm looking forward to it.
But listen to the Top Way 2 as well, obviously.
Listen to all the podcasts.
All of them?
All equally good podcasts.
Sorry for Harry Hicks first.
Oh, might have to edit that one out. Thank you very much for joining us on the Tottenham Way. Hopefully Dan will be back next week without his puncture wounds. But yeah, otherwise just enjoy the games. See you next week. Come on, you Spurs.
Come on, Tottenham.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Going to the gym can be discouraging, especially if you're putting in the work but barely seeing changes. But with Tonal, you can actually see your progress with every workout. Tonal provides the convenience of a full gym and the expertise of a personal trainer anytime at home with one sleek system. Designed to reduce your mental load, Tonal is the ultimate strength training system, helping you focus less on workout planning and more on getting results. No more second-guessing your technique. Tonal gives you real-time coaching cues to dial in your form and help you lift safely and effectively. After a quick assessment, Tonal sets the optimal weight for every move and adjusts in 1 pound increments as you get stronger, so you're always challenged. Tonal lets you choose from a variety of expert-led workouts, from strength to aero hit to yoga and mobility to keep you coming back for more. For a limited time, go to Tonal.com to get $500 off your Tonal purchase plus a free 4-year warranty. That's Tonal.com for $500 off plus a free 4-year warranty. Tonal.com.
Life is a workout, and Smoothie King is here to help you power through. Whether you're crushing morning miles or sprinting through back-to-back meetings, give your body the energy, protein, and power it needs to help you conquer your goals. Only at Smoothie King.